Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He dives, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Great to be with you on this Thursday evening from our WSBT studios in Mishawaka. It is 7 minutes after the top of the hour on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. By Laban Insurance, the agency that rocks. See why at LabanInsurance.com. By Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. And by Blackthorn Golf Club. And the Blackthorn cart, just $99. And you can save up to 80% on rounds of golf, including golf cart, at Blackthorn Golf Club. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett alongside Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. South Bend Cubs played earlier today, so we have a full Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat tonight. We can tell you that Lansing defeated South Bend today at Four Winds Field 6-4. Cubs scored three in the eighth to take the lead 4-3. Lansing scored three in the top of the ninth due to five walks in the top of the ninth inning. And Lansing splits the four-game series with South Bend. Lugnuts won today 6-4. Brand new series starts tomorrow night. 7:35 first pitch. It's game five of the eight-game homestand as we take on the Tigers affiliate, the West Michigan Whitecaps. That's tomorrow night. What are we going to do tonight to take advantage of this full sports beat? Well, it is 100 days until Notre Dame, Michigan on the gridiron at Notre Dame Stadium. So we'll have some fun talking about this great matchup being 100 days away as of today. Also, we've got Tyler James joining us at the bottom of this hour with the IndyInsider.com recruiting update. As always, Tyler has a lot of good information to pass along. His first chance to talk about Nana Asofo-Mensah, the four-star weak side defensive end pass rusher who picked Notre Dame over Texas within the last week. He will talk about Mensah's commitment. Also, there could be another Notre Dame recruit verbally committing tomorrow, and it's a tight end. And we'll have Tyler talk all about that coming up in just a couple of moments. Plus, an in-state wide receiver has recently received a Notre Dame offer. We'll let Tyler give you all the details coming up at the bottom of this hour. We have our My 5 question of the day. The May-June gap between the end of spring semester and the start of summer hasn't always been kind to Fighting Irish head coach Brian Kelly over the years. So the flip side is, what are five May-June pleasant surprises that could help boost Kelly's mood this summer? So we'll have Eric answer those questions coming up in just a little bit. Also, next hour on the program, we're going to talk about the Chicago Cubs minor league system. Tom Uziak from the Cubs Den will join us to offer his insight on some of the top prospects, some of the struggles, who's doing well right now. Three of the four Cub affiliates are under 500 at this time, so we'll talk some Cubs prospects in just about an hour. And also, we'll have another installment of Rapid Fire and check out what's happening in Major League Baseball. That's all coming up in just a little bit. We start the program off with some really, really sad news. This was posted on social media late this afternoon by Kurt Mallory, the son of Bill Mallory, the former Indiana head football coach. And according to a tweet from Kurt this afternoon, that his father, Bill Mallory, Tuesday underwent an emergency brain surgery, and according to Mallory, there has been no improvement in his father's condition, and Kurt is telling everybody that Bill Mallory currently is in the midst of hospice care, so this is turning into a horrible story, and I know, Eric, you spent a lot of time covering Indiana football and Bill Mallory. In fact, you know, we've talked over the last year. We need to get Bill on the program just to talk about old times. He did so many great things for Indiana football and probably wasn't appreciated enough in his time with the Hoosiers. So as someone that spent a lot of time around him, just what pops into your head when you hear this story?
Well, it's very sad for me because, we're talking about this in the office. A lot of great memories. I mean, I was really pretty new on the beat. Indiana went through three football coaches in quick succession. Lee Corso, and then Sam Weich had 1 year, and then Bill Mallory came in. And I covered Bill Mallory's 0-11 team, and I was talking to the local Kiwanis group the other day here, and that was one of the coolest seasons that I ever covered. And people say, what's wrong with you? And it was just neat because that was the beginning, and just to see how you hold a team together when they're 0-11 and you're a brand new coach and you're trying to get buy-in. I mentioned to them that I came back and did an interview with him maybe the next fall, and they got progressively better. They went 4-7 the next year. They were 6-5, made it into a bowl game. And then the next year, his fourth year, they were playing for a Rose Bowl berth in November. They lost to Michigan State. But I went to his office, and Bill Mallory had some National Coach of the Year awards from when he was at Colorado and Miami, Ohio. He actually had Miami, Ohio as a top 15 national team, undefeated. And I walk into his office, and there's all these trophies and all these awards and so forth. But smack dab in the middle of all that was this football his 0-11 team gave to him that said Indiana Coach of the Year. And I told the story when, after the Purdue game, Indiana-Purdue game up at Purdue at the end of the 0-11 season, I couldn't find him after the game, nor could any of the other media. And I walked underneath the bleachers, and there was I could hear sobbing. And I thought, but that can't be Bill Mallory. He's sitting on this picnic table underneath the stands, kind of in a weird spot at Purdue. And he's sitting on the picnic table clutching that football like it was the most important thing in the world to him. And it was just the lessons you learned about building a program from Bill Mallory and doing it the right way. Just a guy that just was dripping with integrity. He is certainly, you know, when my career is all said and done, he will certainly be either at the top of the list of the people I covered or right there, because he really impacted me and seeing how somebody does things the right way.
From 0-11 to 4-7 to 6-6, then in 87, 8-4, and 88, they went 8-3-1. Then they rattled around the 500 mark for many years, including in 93 going 8-4. And then the last year was 1996, where Indiana went 3-8. And Mallory went 69-77-3 at Indiana. All together with Miami, Colorado, Northern Illinois, and Indiana, 168 wins, 129 losses, and 4 ties. And was a football player at Miami, 55-56. He was an end, and I guess I should know better, but I was kind of shocked today knowing that Bill's 83 years old.
Yeah, somebody in the office asked me how old he was, and I said, I think he's in his 70s. And then when I saw 83, I was a little shocked.
4 days ago was his birthday.
Really?
May 20th, yeah.
One of the funniest things that ever happened to me was going to an Indiana practice. You could, you know, say, hey, I'd like to come over and watch a practice. And this was when I was down in Columbus, Indiana. So it was a pretty short drive over to Bloomington. And they had this kid named Gary Gooden on their team. And he ran like a 4-2-something 40-yard dash. And they were trying to find a spot for him. You know, where could they use this breathtaking speed? Because he was very frail and he was very timid as a football player. So they tried him at running back. They tried him wide receiver. Now they were trying him at defensive back. And they were running a drill where you had to tackle the running back. It was a one-on-one drill. And he kept just not being able to make the tackle. And it was very poor technique, very timid, kind of tiptoeing up to the running back and kind of getting straight-armed. So Bill Mallory's watching this from the sideline, and you could see the steam coming off his head. Finally, on about the fifth try of trying to do this, Mallory, and I guess, I mean, so he's 83 now, so this would have been, he would have been in his 50s probably, comes flying off the sidelines and decks the running back, makes the tackle, and he goes, that's how you make a tackle.
Whoa.
And dusts himself off, goes and stands back on the sidelines, and I thought, wow, I want to run through a wall right now.
Holy cow.
It was pretty cool.
Well, you think about Bill Mallory. He played for Era and worked for Woody. When you work for two guys who are known by their first names, you had a great chance to learn some amazing things. So again, Kurt Mallory, the son of Bill Mallory, mentioned this on social media today, that his father, Bill, had emergency brain surgery on Tuesday. Sadly, no improvement, and hospice care has begun for the former Indiana football coach, Bill Mallory. Obviously, our thoughts go out to the Mallory family. Kurt, the head coach down at Indiana State, I believe going into his second year with the Sycamores. So we wish that family nothing but the best in absolutely horrible circumstances, as Bill Mallory just turned 83 4 days ago. 100 days from today, Eric, we'll be at Notre Dame Stadium. We'll be probably in the midst of our game day sports beat pregame show, as Notre Dame and Michigan will tee it up at 7:30 that day. And we are 100 days from Notre Dame and Michigan. So let's just have a little fun. Let's talk about the game as if it was right around the corner, since we're now 100 days away. I guess just in general, Eric, what type of game are you expecting? Is this going to be one of those games where, with the defenses that we believe will be on the field, that maybe the first team to 20, 23 points might be in good shape?
It could turn into the Georgia game, and not necessarily, not necessarily with the final score the same, but in that kind of game, you know, where the defenses really do kind of take over.
And Dalen Hayes comes around the edge and strips the ball from Shea Patterson to win the game, right?
There you go. There's some blind dateness to this game from the standpoint that Michigan's going to have a different offense. You know, mm-hmm. they've changed some offensive coaches, offensive personnel, with their coaching staff, have a new offensive line coach. So there's going to be different offensive influences. You're still going to see Harbaugh's stamp on it, but you're going to have, what's the guy that was just at Florida?
McElvain.
McElvain and Ed Warner are going to have influences on that offense, but it's still going to be Jim Harbaugh's offense. I mean, Shea Patterson is such a wild card, but I think the real wild card is the talent around Shea Patterson. Is it markedly better? Because if it's not, then I think Indy's defense is going to have a pretty good day, no matter how well Shea Patterson plays, because he's not a true dual threat guy. If Notre Dame can get the kind of pressure that I think that they can get on Shea Patterson, Shea Patterson's coming out party is not going to be in Notre Dame Stadium. It'll be somewhere else. But on the flip side of that, you have Brandon Wimbush, a pretty good core of trending wide receivers, but certainly
no alpha.
No alpha. You have a really great group of tight ends. You got a reshuffled offensive line, and you have some question marks at running back. So really, this is a big game for the Notre Dame quarterback against the best defense he'll see all season, and maybe the best defense he's seen in his college career. I mean, I have a hard time believing Michigan's defense is going to be better than Georgia's, but in some senses they are. They're a better defensive line, Darren. And so, you know, how is Brandon Wimbush going to perform? You know, it'd be ideally you'd rather have the Ball State or Vanderbilt game first and give him a chance to kind of get settled in against a defense that's not nearly as good as Michigan's. But Michigan's got a lot of talent. Rashawn Gary is maybe the best player they'll see on defense next year among several. So I think this is going to be a really, really fun game. I think it's impossible to kind of overhype it. Is the losing team going to be done for the season? No, but by no means are they, but they face kind of a perceptual problem.
Yes.
That whoever of the head coaches that loses this, they're going to be kind of labeled as not being able to win a big game. I'm not sure what Michigan will be ranked, but if they're higher than 11th, that'll be the highest ranked team to come into Notre Dame Stadium in Brian Kelly's tenure. USC was this year, which was number 11, and they beat them by 35 points. They're not going to beat Michigan by 35 points, nor is Michigan going to beat Notre Dame by that much. But if they're a top 10 team, strangely, Brian Kelly's faced the bulk of the top 10 teams on the road, or he's faced top 10 teams that weren't top 10 when they came into Notre Dame Stadium, but later in the year finished in the top 10. So it's a strange thing that he's gone 8 years and hasn't faced a top 10 team at home. So the losing coach is going to have to wear this for a while, because there's not going to be a lot of opportunities for redemption right away for either of them, but they certainly can recover from it. But whoever wins it has a leg up in terms of positioning themselves for a playoff conversation.
100 days from Notre Dame, Michigan. Just some thoughts of the Irish or the Wolverines. We've mentioned Shea Patterson's name a couple of times already in this segment. The brand new quarterback for Michigan. The NCAA recently labeled him good to go this year as he left Ole Miss and can play this year for Michigan. He only has 10 career games under his belt. For a guy with so much pomp and circumstance, 2 years at Ole Miss, he played 3 games as a freshman, and he played 7 games last year before he got injured and did not play against Arkansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Texas A&M, and Mississippi State. In those 10 games, he has thrown 12 interceptions, and he has been sacked 28 times. Now, just taking a small little sample size, I think it's fair to say 3 of the better defenses he faced this year, for sure Alabama and LSU, Auburn, I think we can at least put them on the good side of a defense. Against Alabama, Patterson went 14 for 29, a 48% completion percentage, 165 yards, no touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. Against Auburn, had a really good day. This game was on the road, and he went 34 of 51 for 346 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. And then against LSU, a team that Brandon Wimbush and Ian Book went up against in the bowl game, against the Tigers, Patterson went 10 of 23, 116 yards, no touchdowns, and 3 interceptions. So against the 3 best teams that he faced while on the field at Ole Miss last year, he had 2 touchdown passes and 5 interceptions, and 2 of the 3 games, he was below a 50% completion percentage. So there's still a lot of talk about Shea Patterson because he was a 5-star coming out of high school. And I think, Eric, a lot of the analysts who look at all these things thought he maybe was the best quarterback coming out of high school a couple of years ago. But I think it is a guy that still has to prove that he can get it done in the big-time spots, and this is going to be a huge game for him. You know, all the Michigan fans feel like that Patterson is kind of one of the missing pieces, although I think their offensive line might be missing a couple of pieces this year. We'll see how they play against the Fighting Irish front, which should be a very interesting matchup. But he's got some work to do in order to become the quarterback, I think, that Michigan is hoping that he can be and can help Michigan get back to a double-digit win total and maybe have a chance to beat Michigan State and Ohio State for once.
There's some mystery here because you are projecting, and not always do these quarterbacks turn into who they're supposed to be. Blake Barnett is a case in point of a guy that didn't. When you look at his pass efficiency numbers in those 7 games last year, a 151.5 would have put him about 19th in the country, right around where Jarrett Stidham from Auburn is, had he played a full season. But his ranking as a freshman, as a first-year starter, was 121.0. And Brandon Wimbush as a first-year starter was 121.4.
Uh-huh.
So it's pretty similar. So if you're going to project Shea Patterson to make this big quantum leap in performance, do you do the same thing with Wimbush? Because he was pretty well thought of coming out of high school, certainly a top 75 type player overall. But you're right. Again, is his surrounding cast at Michigan on offense only, not defense? Mm-hmm. Defense, it's much better. But on offense, is it better than what he had at Ole Miss last year? I'm not
debatable.
Sure. Yeah, it's debatable.
Very debatable. I mean,
Michigan's a little bit of a mystery because there's not a lot of information that comes out of spring practice. They
hold
hold it behind closed doors and in foreign countries and in other continents and stuff.
99 days from today, when we're getting set for the matchup, we still will not have a depth chart for Michigan.
Right. Well, the one thing that will not be the central storyline, I can guarantee you, is Freddie Cantina's revenge against his old team.
The Irish wide receiver getting set for his second year in South Bend after leaving the Wolverines. Eric and Darren with you. Tomorrow will be 99 days until the opener. We got a couple of leftover questions we'll get to tomorrow. Next, we have our IndyInsider.com recruiting update. Tyler James with a lot of info to pass along to you. He is the Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune. You will hear him and the most famous recruiting music in the land coming up next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on 96.1 FM WSBT with the NDInsider.com recruiting update. Here's Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and the South Bend Tribune's Fighting Irish football recruiting insider, Tyler James.
It's one of our favorite times of the week. We hear from Tyler and we find out everything that's going on in Fighting Irish football recruiting from the recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune, Tyler James. You can follow him on Twitter at TJamesNDI. That's TJamesNDI. And of course, you can follow him in the South Bend Tribune and NDInsider.com. Tyler, how are you?
I'm doing well, Darren. How about yourself?
Doing okay. Thank you so much. Since we last spoke, Nana Asofo-Mensah, a weak side defensive end from near Fort Worth, Texas, verbally committed to the Fighting Irish, and he seems like a guy that a lot of the great schools in college football were interested in, and in-state Texas, a late push. But Tyler, Mensah said yes to the University of Notre Dame. Put it into perspective, how important was his commitment to the Fighting Irish?
Yeah, it's really important. I think we always are trying to figure out what Notre Dame's going to do in terms of finding pass rushers, and it has been somewhat of an issue in recruiting. The 2018 class, Justin Adamolola is a weak side defensive end, though, who I think is probably more of a strong side defensive end. So to me, I don't know that they really addressed the position in 2018. And then the 2017 class had Kofi Wardlow, who's a project that Notre Dame is working on developing, and then Jonathan McAllister, who's already gone from the program. So there was a bit of a gap developing there, and Nana will help fill that. The Irish haven't signed a four-star recruit at weak side defensive end, according to Rivals rankings, since Julian Aquara in the 2016 class. That class also included Dalen Hayes, but he was projected as an outside linebacker, although he does play weak side defensive end for Notre Dame. So I think it's important in that aspect, getting a weak side defensive end. It also kind of helps bolster this defensive line class they're putting together, which is starting to become one of the best D-line classes of the Kelly era. We'll see if they can add some more help there. And beating Texas in Texas for a four-star recruit is important. Notre Dame doesn't always get a four-star recruits when they head down to Texas. Sometimes they're settling for three-star recruits down there, but to get a four-star recruit like Nana Asofo-Mensah at such an important position, it just kind of all comes together as a big recruiting victory led by Mike Elston. So really good news for the Irish, and hopefully if they can use that as some sort of momentum moving into the summer months.
Mr. Hansen, Mike Elston's had a pretty good couple of months.
He has. Tyler had a picture of him with his both his hands up in the air. I said he's kind of frozen that position lately because he's had a really nice run. Tyler, I know you had a chance to talk to Nana today. What was maybe a takeaway that you got from talking to him? And in terms of maybe high end of this guy, ceiling of this guy, who might he compare to that Notre Dame fans would be familiar with?
Yeah, I think in terms of a comparison, I think Dalen Hayes isn't a bad comparison, although Dalen played more linebacker throughout high school. But I think a similar skill set. I do think Nana has a chance to be a bit bigger than Dalen. But someone that can really come off the edge, could also drop in coverage if needed, can do a little bit of everything, and just has really good athleticism. So there's really not a long catalog of guys that you can compare him to, because, like I mentioned, Notre Dame hasn't really found guys like Nana at the weak side defensive end position. So, and then in terms of talking to Nana today, spoke to him about a number of different things. I thought it was kind of interesting. He talked about Mike Elston sort of laid out a plan for him of how he wants to develop him, the way he will use him throughout his career, and he really had a lot of trust in that and what Mike Elston was telling him. Obviously, academics is a very important factor in his decision, being able to decide to leave the state of Texas and come to Notre Dame. His parents are academically focused, so I think that it just all kind of worked together for Notre Dame. He'd actually had been silently committed, which is a term I don't love, but he told Notre Dame that he planned to come to Notre Dame after he left for his official visit at Notre Dame, but then obviously after that took an official visit to Texas and was sort of weighing those two. But he said the whole time he was visiting Texas, he just kept thinking about Notre Dame, so that was why he knew he made the right choice.
Before I get to my real question, as a White Sox fan, do you think when Mensa gets a sack at Notre Dame Stadium, they should play the Na 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 Hey Hey song?
I would be down with that. That'd be good.
See where I'm going there?
I see where you're going. Yeah. I wasn't sure if you were pausing for me to give my approval or if you wanted me to ask.
You looked at me really funny, so I didn't know. All right, here's my
real question. Eric has had that look on his face all day.
I looked at you the same way I looked when you showed me the Ian Happ bobblehead.
Oh, yeah. That's a story for another day. So here's my real question. So in this class of 2019, you've got a weak side defensive end, a strong side defensive end, a nose guard, and a defensive tackle. It's kind of a future defensive line. How good is that group as you put all four together?
I think it's very good. I mean, the fact that they're all four-star recruits is saying something. They don't normally get that many four-star recruits in one class. There's usually, if they can get a good class, they'll get a couple good guys, and then you'll get a couple three-star guys as well. So to be able to have that in this class is just, it's really good top to bottom. Obviously, we'll wait to see. I think they're going to add one or two more potentially in this class. So it could be a real pushing to be one of the best classes they've had under the Kelly era. I think, I don't know if they'll ever beat the 2011 class, which included Aaron Lynch and Ben Council as four-star recruits and Stephon Tuitt and Ishaq Williams as five-star recruits. And then the 2016 class, I think it's the class they're probably in the discussion with right now, with that had Julian Aquara, Dalen Hayes, and Khalid Kareem, with all those guys being four-star recruits. But I think that class didn't necessarily have standout defensive tackles, and I think Jacob Lacy and Hunter Spears could be that in this class. So it really has a chance to be an important one, because I think that it's always been tough for Notre Dame to recruit defensive line as of late, and to be able to continue to do that would be really important.
Tyler, I don't know if Luke Deal pitches, but I know he plays tight end, and Notre Dame is trying to get a verbal commitment from him. I think that he's either the top or one of the top tight end prospects in the country. What does it look like in terms of Notre Dame possibly getting that commitment? Who else is involved?
Well, Deal would certainly be a good name for a pitcher, because he could be dealing on the mound, but I don't know that he has a baseball career in his future. He is a tight end.
They could have used him yesterday.
Yeah. He's from South Carolina, so he might end up going to Clemson. Clemson is one of the other schools that is in his recruitment: Auburn, Notre Dame, Michigan, NC State, Ohio State. I don't really know what's going to happen with Luke's decision. That's supposed to come tomorrow evening. I don't consider Notre Dame a favorite. I'd be a little bit surprised if it were Notre Dame, but nothing would really surprise me with his decision here. So something we'll have to kind of see how it plays out. 6'5", 230-pound recruit out of Greenwood, South Carolina. He's a four-star recruit and the number 9 tight end, according to 24/7 Sports. So we'll see what his decision is, but I think Notre Dame won't have as much luck as they had with Nana Osafa-Mensah, and then they'll have to kind of reevaluate where they're at with tight ends and see who could be their next option.
Okay, and so Wisher and Matt come off the board. Do you think that Notre Dame's just going to go after one tight end in the class, and if they don't get Deal, who's maybe the top prospects they're looking at, and are they kind of in the same echelon as this kid?
I think they could go after potentially two. I just don't know that there's a bunch of names right now that would make it obvious that they could easily get two in the class, but I think they'll certainly try to add at least one. The most talented guy in the class that they're pursuing is Hudson Henry, the number one tight end out of Pulaski Academy, which is the same high school as Luke Jones. But his
brother coaches
also,
that team?
That would be Kevin Kelly, never punt Kevin Kelly. They will. His older brother's played at Arkansas, so it seems to be hard to imagine him not going to Arkansas. But he's actually going to announce a top five tomorrow afternoon. So we'll see if Notre Dame makes that list. Even they might not. We'll have to see what happens there. Ethan Ray was a guy that Notre Dame had been after for a long time, and he left Notre Dame off of his top 10 out of California. So the two other options right now: Jude Wolf out of St. John Bosco High School. He has been on campus previously, and then they recently offered Eric All out of Fairfield, Ohio. He's more of an athletic tight end, with Jude being more of a bigger-bodied tight end. So they're looking at all kinds of different shapes and sizes when it comes to the tight end position, and they may end up having to add a few more guys to the offer list to get what they want.
Talking Fighting Irish football recruiting with Tyler James, Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune. Did the Irish miss out on any recruits this week?
Yeah, in the last week, three guys that Notre Dame have been targeting committed elsewhere. No real surprises. Salim Turner Muhammad committed to Stanford on Sunday. Brandon Smith, a linebacker out of Virginia, committed to Penn State on Monday. And Jeremiah Crudell, a cornerback out of California, committed to Oregon on Sunday. None of those guys, I guess Brandon Smith and Salim Turner Muhammad at certain points, I think, were very high on Notre Dame. Jeremiah Crudell hadn't actually visited Notre Dame, but he did include Notre Dame on his top five. Certainly at the cornerback position, they have K.J. Wallace already, and looking to add maybe another cornerback there. And there's a lot of linebackers at Notre Dame sitting in a good spot with, although none maybe the caliber of Brandon Smith.
Okay, so we haven't had a lot of big news with wide receivers in this class, I understand that in-state wide receiver Bryce Kurtz received a Notre Dame offer this week. You know, what kind of caliber guy is he, and do you think some of the wide receivers are maybe putting Notre Dame on the back burner till they see if the passing game has upgraded this fall?
I think that's absolutely the case. There hasn't been a lot of headway for Notre Dame in terms of guys at the wide receiver position really leaning towards Notre Dame. I think they're kind of in a wait-and-see mode, which is kind of interesting because that's usually kind of how we would describe if a couple years ago how defensive recruits kind of waiting to see how Notre Dame's defense does. But Notre Dame has pretty traditionally recruited pretty well at wide receiver and not had too many issues there, but looking to gain some traction with the number of guys, have hosted some, but nothing that really looks like obvious options of future commitment. So adding a guy to the offer list like Bryce Kurtz, 6 foot, 175-pound kid out of Brownsburg High School here in Indiana, 54 receptions for 897 yards and 14 touchdowns. Has really good speed. He actually played with Hunter Johnson, who is the quarterback who is transferring out of Clemson, who was a five-star quarterback at one point that Notre Dame was actually going after. And Kurtz, back when they were recruiting Hunter, visited Notre Dame a couple times for games in the 2016 season. Wasn't back last year, but we'll see if they can get him back on campus. Doesn't have a lot of big-time national offers: Michigan State, Northwestern, Duke, Iowa, Purdue, and Indiana. So more of a regional prospect at this point. But 24/7 Sports has him as a four-star recruit as the number 41 wide receiver. Rivals a little bit lower, three stars, number 64 wide receiver.
Any Notre Dame football players having any success in track and field this spring?
Yeah, last weekend was Braden Lindsey's chance at winning a couple more state championships. He unfortunately only won one, which I guess if you're any normal athlete, that is a good thing. But he was hoping to win four potentially. Got second places in the 200, the 400, and the 4x4, and then got a first place in the 4x100 relay by running the anchor leg. He'd actually won the 400 the last two 2 years in a row, lost this year with a time of 47.52, which was .07 off the winning time. So a tough break for him there, but he's looking forward to getting on campus and impacting the football team and the track team in the future. And then this week, Jamion Franklin is competing in the state championship in Maryland. He will be throwing the shot put today. Throwing the discus on Saturday. He's seeded to well ahead of the other competitors in the 2A class in Maryland. With last weekend, he threw the shot put 53 feet, 5.5 inches, and threw the discus 175 feet, 10 inches, which would be a state record if he is able to match that at the state meet. It's an unofficial record when it's not at the state meet. So he's actually seeded 34 feet ahead of anyone else in the class in terms of discus. So the heavy favorite there, but he's got to obviously go out and see if he can do that and win some state titles on the track before he heads to Notre Dame next month.
Okay, Notre Dame is going to have a new track and field coach next year when Braden Lindsay gets here. If you were a betting man, and I don't know that you are.
Oh, boy.
If you had to bet a batch of pumpkin rolls.
My pockets are emptying as you speak.
Yeah, if you had to bet a batch of pumpkin rolls, would you put your money on Braden Lindsay in a 40 or Troy Pride Jr. in a 40?
I think I would go with Troy. I think he will be faster for Troy, at least right away, or faster than Braden, at least right away. I think Braden could catch up to him eventually in his career, but I do think Troy is faster right now. I would put my money on Troy, although it would be very little amount of money. It'll be interesting to see how he does. Braden running the 400, I think I have the utmost respect for anyone that runs the 400. I think that's probably the craziest run in track, at least from what my friends that have run that have told me. I would never dare to try to run a 400.
Tyler, what type of stories are you working on for IndyInsider.com and the South Bend Tribune?
Yeah, I got a story. I caught up with Noah Boykin, the cornerback signee in the 2018 class. He'll be here next month to talk to him a little bit about coming to Notre Dame and being ready to potentially contribute early. And then I also spoke with Donna Osafa-Mensah earlier today, so I'll have a story this weekend in the paper about him as well.
Very good. He is Tyler James with all the latest information involving Notre Dame football recruiting. And as always, Tyler, we greatly appreciate your time, and we will talk to you next week.
See you guys.
All right. Tyler James, Fighting Irish Football Recruiting Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Follow him in the Tribune, IndyInsider.com, and on Twitter at TJamesNDI. And you will be ready to tell all your friends about what's happening with Fighting Irish Football Recruiting. When we come back, it is a Notre Dame football-related My 5 Question of the Day. From Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser, Lavitt Insurance, Goshen Heart and Vascular, and Blackthorn Golf Club.
One question, five answers. This is the My 5 Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Well, the May-June gap between the end of spring semester and the start of summer hasn't always been kind to Brian Kelly and the Fighting Irish over the years, so let's flip the script. What are five May-June pleasant surprises that could help boost Brian Kelly's mood this summer, which obviously would lower his handicap? More time for golf.
Right, and I think Brian is happy that Spalding Smales is not on the team.
Really? All right, so let's go with answer number five.
Number five, that Kevin Austin kind of comes out and becomes a big-time contributor as a freshman. I know that there are people on our beat that feel that as possible, that he's a guy that could walk in the door and kind of shake up the Notre Dame wide receiver alignment, and we're going to find out soon enough. He arrives around the middle of June, and I think they get a pretty good idea during the OTAs if that's going to happen.
Number four.
That Liam Eichenberg surges this summer. You know, it wasn't until kind of at the end of spring practice that they finally gave him a chance to win the left tackle spot, and when they did, he took it. There was no, well, you know, if he has a good summer, you know, it's Liam Eichenberg's. But what he needs to do this summer is really get his, not his technique down, but really understand the playbook, the blocking scheme, so that Alex Barrs isn't going to have to be tutoring him on every play, just so that he can play free and up to his potential, because this is a guy that's been kind of percolating as a star, and it's finally starting to happen.
Five May-June pleasant surprises that could help boost Brian Kelly's mood this summer. Number three.
Well, the one defensive position that we're still really not sure about, or most unsure about, is the Rover position. So this surprise would be Shane Simon is every bit as good as Steve Wiltfong says he is. Steve is absolutely going to bat for this kid. I did a feature on him a couple weeks ago, talked to Marquise Dickerson, who played defensive line at Notre Dame as a walk-on. So he knows what Division I players look like because he played around them. And his first day at practice, he said, who's number three? You know, who's number three? He said this kid definitely has the physical tools. He said what separates him is that he has the mental tools to play as a freshman. So it's going to be very interesting. If he's as good as advertised, we're not going to be talking about a timeshare at Rover.
Number two,
that we can finally say the words Chase Claypool and Dexter Williams without inconsistent or enigma being in the sentence. I think that it's going to be harder to say that about Dexter in 2018. I think Chase Claypool might get there. If Chase Claypool plays like he did, you mentioned this yesterday, like he did in the blue-gold game, then the conversation's over. Then Kevin Austin can come in and be a rotation guy and be really strong. But having Chase Claypool play like that, then you're not going to have to worry about Notre Dame's receiving core, because he's kind of the missing piece right now.
The five May-June pleasant surprises that could help boost Brian Kelly's mood this summer. Kevin Austin comes in and does some really good things at wide receiver. Left tackle Liam Eichenberg surges forward. The Rover, Shane Simon, being really, really good as a true freshman. Number two, Chase Claypool and Dexter Williams lose their inconsistent labels. And number one.
Well, this guy right now is in Russia, but he will be back soon, and that's Brandon Wimbush. And Brian Kelly's hope has to be that Brandon Wimbush has a better summer than Shea Patterson, and that it's sustainable.
That's the By 5 question of the day. 3.5 minutes in front of the top of the hour from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, Tom Noy, our columnist, is up at Harbor Shores today covering the senior PGA. We will have the St. Joe softball sectional finals between St. Joseph and New Prairie. We will have South Bend Cubs coverage because they played during the day. A fishing report, a feature on Noah Boykin, NCAA track, and Aurora runs tonight in the 10,000 in NCAA East Regional Finals, and much more.
Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malkus again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrews steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their 9th in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Styers.
Another hour of Budweiser's weekday sports beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. In about 3 minutes, we'll talk to Tom Uziak, who covers the Chicago Cubs minor league system for a couple of internet outlets. We'll talk about some of the players in the Cubs system and how they have performed over the first 2 months of the minor league baseball season. Senior PGA Championship underway, Harbor Shores, Benton Harbor, Michigan. Not a lot of big names at the top right now. Clubhouse leaders at -5. PGA professional Stuart Smith, along with Tim Petrovic, Wes Short, and Barry Lane, 5-under par 66s. Peter Leonard wrapping up his round. He's at 5-under par right now. You go down the line, there are some familiar names. Joe Durant, David Toms, Kenny Perry, and Jerry Pate, all with 3-under par 68s today. Farther down the list, we see Scott Verplank, Corey Pavin, Open Championship winner Todd Hamilton. They're all at minus two. Colin Montgomery wrapping up his round. He's at minus two. And then at one under par, a lot of familiar names. Jerry Kelly, Mark O'Meara, Mike Reed, Jesper Parnevik, Tom Kite, Jay Haas, Billy Andre. The list goes on and on. And that is the first round of the Senior PGA Championship Harbor Shores in Benton Harbor. Three more rounds to go with the final round on Sunday. The biggest of the five majors on the Champions Tour taking place at Harbor Shores. And we're really, really, really excited. Next June of 2019, the U.S. Senior Open will be at Warren Golf Course at Notre Dame. So a lot of those names I just mentioned will be playing at Warren, and we will have a major championship in the South Bend area for the first time in quite some time, and it is going to be a whole lot of fun at Warren Golf Course in about 13 months. And if you drive by Warren, you'll see a lot of things that are happening as the USGA prepares well in advance of a national championship at a golf course.
Not just the backyard, but the front yard when it comes to Warren next year.
Right. That's right.
It's going to be right there.
Lot of fun. And again, we want to just pass along this information. This is obviously an extremely sad story, especially for friends and, let's face it, Indiana football fans. Bill Mallory, their former head coach, according to his son, Kurt, he posted on social media today that his father, Bill, on Tuesday had emergency brain surgery. Kurt says, sadly, no improvement and hospice care has begun. Bill Mallory, 83 years old, and unfortunately, and not the type of shape we were hoping to hear about, and we will wish the Mallory family nothing but the best as Bill and the family goes through a very, very difficult time.
Really sad.
Absolutely. Tremendous football coach down at Indiana University for many years, won 169 games at Miami, Colorado, Northern Illinois, and Indiana. We're going to talk some baseball right now. Tom Uzziak always joins us in January and February to talk about all the prospects in the Cubs minor league system. And he's going to join us for a couple of moments tonight just to kind of give us an idea where we are almost 2 months into the minor league baseball season. And we always appreciate Tom's time. He's a minor league contributor in a couple of places, the Cubs Den, one of those particular spots, and he'll tell you all the spots. You can read his work in just a couple of moments. Tom, it's Darren. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great, Darren. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you. I want to start with a young man who started the year in South Bend and just a few days ago left for extended spring training, and that is 19-year-old pitcher Jose Albertos, who Baseball America has as the number three prospect in the Chicago Cubs system, a 19-year-old pitcher out of Mexico with so much promise. Had a really good run at Eugene last year, short season baseball in the Northwest League. And for South Bend, he started the year in the rotation, but after four starts, there was just a lot of control issues, and the hope was put him in the bullpen for some time, and let's see if he can work out some of those issues. But right now, Tom, unfortunately, it just never worked out for Jose. And just to offer the numbers to our listeners, in 13 innings with South Bend, 17 hits allowed, 32 walks, 17 strikeouts, gave up 27 earned runs, and the opponents hit 321 against Albertos. So, Tom, I guess offer before this rough stretch began for Jose Albertos, what were your expectations for Jose now and in the future, and have they changed at all knowing how much he has struggled through 13 innings this year?
Well, to get to the last question first, I don't think that they've changed so much because when you're looking at Jose Albertos, you're looking at somebody who's not only 19 years old, he's a very young 19. He's not going to turn 20 till, I believe, November of this year.
Correct.
So he's very young for this level. It was very hopeful that the Cubs brought him to this level at this point. He had some of these red flags last year when he was with Eugene. There were some control issues. He seemed to work his way out of them. So they thought that with a year's worth of experience and a full spring training and everything, those issues could be handled. And obviously they weren't. They were there. The While I believe that the Cubs did the right thing with him to try to have it work out through, you know, at that level, worked it through the bullpen, I do think they also let it linger on a little bit too much. They probably should have been a little bit quicker with the trigger with this guy. I think that it's going to be better for him to go down where there's no, you know, not a lot of people watching, not a lot of pressure and everything to work out these issues that he's had with control. And one of the best things I think about this is that they're going to get him out of here before he does something like hurt himself or hurt somebody else. That can really damage a player's psyche as he's going forward. If he's trying and struggling and all of a sudden he pops somebody, and then he's going to become gun-shy or something like that. So getting him down to extended spring training to try to work out some of these mechanical issues, maybe even starting him back again in Eugene for a little bit before bringing him back to South Bend, I think that's going to be the right way to go with this. And I don't think that he's damaged himself as far as a prospect goes.
Tom, a guy coming into this season who I think there were some pretty high hopes for. I don't know if maybe hopes is the right word, but Adbert Alzolay, he's a guy who's worked his way through the Cubs organization. 23 years old, he started off really well, but he's kind of hit a speed bump. 9 combined runs allowed and 18 hits in his last 2 starts in Iowa. What do you see with him right now?
Well, again, too, this is a learning process with Adzolay. He's 23 years old. He's pitching 3 years below league average in AAA. So it's a little bit expected to see somebody struggle a little bit, especially with at AAA, where there's a lot of people who've got major league experience. He's going to have the stuff that can contribute at the major league level. You're talking an upper level, upper 90s fastball, 4 pitches that he can command. It's just the experience factor, I believe, at this point that's going to be with him. It's not going to be something that he's going to be able to jump straight to the major leagues like you've seen some of these superstars with the Cubs do, like Chris Bryant or Kyle Schwarber. It's going to be a process, and he's going to have to do his finishing at AAA.
Tom Usiak talking Chicago Cubs minor league prospects on WSBT Radio. Let me throw out 2 more names from the South Bend roster, Tom. Brendan Little and Corey Abbott. Little, in his last 18 innings, 17 of those innings, he has not given up a run. He gave up a 5 spot in his 6th inning in his previous start, but last night against Lansing, 7 shutout innings, 3 hits. His curveball was nasty. And then you have Corey Abbott, Tom, who set a South Bend Cubs record since the affiliation began in 15 with 11 strikeouts in 6 innings in his last start, May 19th, at Fort Wayne. It was 6 shutout innings for Abbott. This could be a difficult question because you got a first-round pick and a second-round pick. I like both of them. Is there one of the two that you feel like has just a little bit more upside than the other, or is it too close to call in the early stages of their careers?
I think right now it's a little too close to call. You had a lot of fun last night watching Brendan Little pitching. He had good command of that curveball, and what that allowed him to do is what we call pitch backwards. He was able to use the curveball and his other off-speed pitch to set up his fastball instead of what we always consider the opposite, using your fastball to set up your breaking pitches. So He got that going for him yesterday, and it was great to see. The big question with Little always is going to be, is he going to have enough with that fastball to be able to offset the lineup 2-3 times through? It's going to be a process that we're going to see through this season at South Bend. If he can do that, they'll keep him as a starting pitcher. If not, they may look to him as a bullpen pitcher. Corey Abbott, though, I do believe is somebody who's got a starter's repertoire. I believe that Corey was the most polished pitcher that they selected last year, even a little bit more polished than Alex Lang. Right now, they're just getting him some of the experience that he has here, and he's seen what has happened with him, that he's able, once he gets everything going, to be able to dominate like that. So right now, Corey Abbott would have just a little bit of an edge over Brendan Little, but these guys are very close.
Hey, you just mentioned Alex Lang. He was taking three picks after Brendan Little in the first round last year, and Lang looks like he's starting to come on. He was kind of up and down early on, but he's given up just a run in his last two starts combined. Talk about him a little bit.
Well, I mean, that's the same thing, too, with Alex Lang. We've had a little bit of inconsistency that we've seen throughout the year. You have to wonder, all of these guys are very new to this experience of professional baseball. There's 27 draftees that are playing at A level or above this year. That's unheard of. You don't have 18 of the people that you just selected a few months ago playing at this high a level. So they're going to have their fits and starts until they get, you know, used to where they're at. Alex Lang, similar in some respects to Brendan Little, is that he's got the very polished curveball, off-speed pitches. His fastball is not as dominant as some of the other ones we've seen. Pitching backwards for him again, too, using those off-speed pitches to set up his fastball is going to be the key to him, and he's got it working now.
Talking to Tom Uziak, follows the Chicago Cubs minor league system and writes for Locked On Cubs and the Cubs Den. South Bend's offense has been very hit and miss so far this year. And Tom, over the last 20 starts, the rotation's ERA is just a tick above 2. And unfortunately, South Bend's only 9-11. There's been bullpen issues. The defense has let them down. And the offense has struggled hitting with runners in scoring position. Are there some highlights you're seeing on this South Bend roster right now in terms of the position players and their offense?
Well, I mean, there are some players on offense that are doing pretty well for South Bend. You like the approach that Jared Young is using at the plate. He's kind of like at times carrying this offense. Austin Fuller, he's had a little bit of struggles lately, but he had his average up above 300 just a few days ago. So I think you're going to see a lot of production out of those guys. The one that you're going to have to look at and see, he's getting ready to blossom, is Miguel Amaya.
Love him.
I think that with Miguel, he was always thought of as an offensive first catcher when he was first signed. Then when he went and started playing, they saw how well he was doing on defense, and his offense fell a little bit behind him. Now that's catching up again, too. And again, he's also very young at 19 years old coming here. He's got a lot of learning to do. I saw him at opening day, and I thought he was one of the ball boys because he's still got braces on and everything. So I think that Miguel, he's got a big frame that's going to be that you're going to grow into, get a lot more power to him, and that's the guy I think that's going to come out and blossom a lot for South Bend, and they'll carry the offense. One other name I want to throw out there, because he's just brand new there too, we'll have to wait and see, is Nelson Velasquez. Yeah, he has got some of the best power in the system. It's just that he is so young and so new to this situation right now.
A little outmatched at times at this point, but he's getting there, that's for sure.
Yeah. Tom, Darren and I were talking about this the other day. It sounds like the Cubs, with this draft coming up, are going to go position player heavy again. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think that they should.
Yes.
I think they really should go there. And if I could lobby the Cubs for one thing, get somebody who can play first base. We've all seen this catcher playing first base, mm-hmm. outfielder playing first base, second baseman playing first base. And I think a little bit of that is what's contributing to a lot of the errors that you see there. They don't have somebody at first base who can save some of these guys.
Agreed.
And I think that would be something I would really like to see the Cubs to do, somebody who can come in and actually field first base. Getting hitters is something that they should also really stress on, not somebody who they think can be run producers. They've got enough of those, except they could probably use a few more left-handed ones. But somebody who can consistently put the bat on the ball. I think that's one of the big things in the entire franchise, from major leagues all the way down to the Dominican Academy, that they lack. They have lack people who can put the bat on the ball, keep the line moving during the innings, and keep that offense going. That to me would be what I would stress in the draft.
And Tom, just to build on your comments, when you think about the trade deadline, and I'm not necessarily 100% buying all the Manny Machado talk at this particular time. Maybe something happens. But at this point, just for the sake of fun, if you're going to try to do something like that, there aren't many position players in the system you would think the Baltimore Orioles are going to be fighting over. It's going to be from the Cubs' major league roster, right?
Absolutely. And don't try to buy into some of these things. Well, because it's the same position, they're going to be looking at Addison Russell for Manny Machado or something like that. Manny Machado is somebody that everybody wants. So you're going to have to target somebody that everybody wants from the Cubs roster, and who that is, that's going to vary between person to person. But you're not going to be getting Manny Machado for Tommy La Stella.
No. No doubt.
Point.
Here's my final question. Give me one name from the system that has impressed you as a hitter and also as a pitcher so far.
All right. The one player that I want everybody to look at, he was in South Bend a few years ago, and he's always had a lot of tools, but has never been able to put it all together. He's had some injuries, too. Jeffrey Baez, who's playing at Tennessee, he's batting .317, 5 home runs, 10 stolen bases, 21 RBI. We don't know for sure, but what if this guy is making a kind of epiphany that we saw out of Wilson Contreras a couple years ago? Then you could have a really nice ball player. And if you all remember Jeffrey Baez, too, he has got probably the best arm I've ever seen in right field, on top of all of that. So that's something that's a hitter that I would look for. And one of the pitchers that I've been looking for and been very impressed with is someone right in your backyard there, Javier Assad.
Mm-hmm. Throw strikes.
If he throws strikes, he works quickly. He keeps the defense on their toes. He's able to also pick up ground ball outs as well as strikeouts, too. This is if Jose Alberto was performing as well as Javier Assad was, they'd be already looking at promoting him. So
true. That's very, very true. Hey, Tom, as we wrap up the conversation, let Cub fans know in our area websites you can go to so they can read your work on the Cubs minor league system.
You can read me at LockedOnCubs.com or at CubsDen.com also. I'm Twitter. You can get me at TheTomU. And you know, I've been a little bit behind because I myself have been dealing with a few injuries. But I'm getting back on the horse right now, and I'll be out there on Saturday.
Tom, always appreciate your time. Look forward to visiting on Saturday at Four Winds Field.
All right, look forward to seeing you guys there. Go South Bend.
All right, Tom, thank you very much. Greatly appreciated. Tom Usiak, Locked On Cubs, and the Cubs in offering his insight on the Chicago Cubs minor league system. And the Cubs starting rotation in South Bend has just been fantastic over the last 3 weeks. Unfortunately, it has not produced the runs, or I should say the wins, that group has deserved, or the team. But hopefully some more consistent offense, defense, and bullpen will come the way of South Bend in the second half. And there's a good chance some of the guys we just talked about from that starting rotation might be going up to Myrtle Beach over the next month or in the second half. There's some really good-looking young arms right now in South Bend. Cubs lost to Lansing today. They host West Michigan tomorrow night at 7:35. It is 27 minutes after 6 o'clock. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. Coming up next, we'll start another installment of Rapid Fire from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Major League All-Star and former Notre Dame baseball player A.J. Pollock joins the Leprechaun Lunch Friday at noon on 96.1 WSBT, South Bend.
Boy, that's a major name dropping right there.
I just got in crazy timing. I just got a text from AJ because I had sent him a text saying, "Hey, don't forget, you know, blah blah." And he just responded saying, "Okay, great, ready to go." So
awesome,
we're set.
So AJ will be on Leprechaun Lunch tomorrow. You're on the air at noon.
That's right.
Evan Sharpley, Sean Steyers, and AJ Pollock.
Former roommate of Evan Sharpley, A.J. Pollock.
You got to do a little digging.
Baseball days.
I need some dirt about those two rooming together.
Want some good stories. Was it all protein powder and weights, or give me some good stuff.
Maybe the stories we want to hear are off the air, but
that's right.
We just want to hear a couple.
That's right.
Just a few. All right, Sean's ready to host Rapid Fire on this Thursday afternoon.
Fill in the blank on this first one, Darren. The fact that Notre Dame and Michigan open the season 100 days from today is blank.
Actually has me a little excited about the college football season. I love the Stanley Cup playoffs, love Major League Baseball, but I got to admit, tomorrow will be down to 99 days.
Yes.
We're out of the triple digits. And it gets me pumped up because there's a very good group of games that first weekend of the college football season, unlike college basketball, where it takes you a while to get interested because of the level of competition in right. Some of those early games. Boy, we got some boomers right off the bat, including Notre Dame and Michigan. So 100 days away, yep, that gets me excited.
Kind of like those early 90s Notre Dame-Michigan matchups when they just came right out of the gates and played each other, didn't have the cupcakes to kind of warm things right. up. And, I mean, it can't come soon enough for me. I'm with you. I'm pretty fired up, especially with all this other downer stuff going on right now in the sports world, just ready for some college football. And, I mean, it'll be here before you know it. 100 days isn't that far away, and that means that about 30 days or so, a month or so before that, they'll start fall camp, and we'll be out there covering that and talking about that here on SportsBeat and on WSBT. So it can't come soon enough. I'm fired up and ready to go.
And I'm getting excited because not too long from now, I think it's June 4th, we'll be going up to Bridgman, taking the program to the Kelly Cares Foundation event, and then we're going to be at the Kelly Cares Foundation Football 101 event again this year around June 11th, June 12th. So we'll get a little football flavor in June.
Get a little BK and some other guys, see how that goes. Yep, that'll be really fun. Okay, after seeing the Cubs score one run, you kind of alluded to this in your Tom Uzziak interview, but after seeing the Cubs score one run combined in their two losses to Cleveland, do you buy or sell the Cubs are going to have to make a move for either Manny Machado or somebody else to kind of get that offense going more consistently?
So you phrased it, they have to.
Yeah, do they need to make a move sooner than later? Yeah.
Okay, there's a difference. If you would have said, do they have to, I would say no. Do they need to? You can never have enough offense. I mean, their starting pitching has been okay. It's been a little hit and miss with Darvish and Chatwood.
Yeah.
Lester has pitched above my expectations. Hendricks is Hendricks. Do they need to? Gosh, I still think with their 25-man roster right now, they're the best team in the National League Central. Now, up to this minute, are they performing as the best team in the National League Central? No, they start today 4 games out of first. Milwaukee leads the way. They've now built a 3.5-game lead over St. Louis and Pittsburgh. So, on paper, are the Cubs the best team? Yes. Do they have the capabilities, that 25-man roster, to win the division? I really do say yes, I believe so. So I will say they don't need to, but it wouldn't hurt, obviously.
Wouldn't hurt.
But I think with this roster, they're going to be fine. Remember, they were under .500 in the first half last year and came out after the All-Star break, and they roared to the top of the NL Central.
So do you kind of peg it on what they've got to give up to make something like that happen, if it were Machado or whoever it happened to be?
I mean, that's been my thought. It's going to have to come off the major league roster because I just look at the minor league system. I don't know who the Baltimore Orioles, for example, would be interested in.
Yeah.
Some of the guys like Abbott and Little we're talking about, they're so early on in their careers. I mean, that's going to be throw-in material at this point. That's not going to be the target of a trade. So is Addison Russell an above-average shortstop? I say no at this point. I mean, he's been in the majors long enough. He's been very inconsistent offensively.
But you've got
Hap,
team control for 3 years.
You do. You do, but Hap and Russell would seem to be the guys that would be in the talks for Machado, but is that going to be enough without any minor league talent to kind of push the deal over the top? Let's face it, there's going to be a lot of contenders bidding on Machado.
Yeah.
So is Russell and Hap a combination of or one of those plus some other stuff going to be good enough? I just really question it at this point.
Yeah. And I guess you also have to figure, while there are going to be a lot of teams interested, what are they going to be willing to give up for what's going to turn out to be a rental as well? But I just look at the Cubs offense. I realize when you look at the whole, just the total stats of where they are, it looks like a good offense. But the problem is they've fallen into this pattern where they're feasting on some bad teams, and then they face a couple good pitchers. And, I mean, I don't even know if you can consider Plutko a good pitcher. I mean, he just got called up back up from AAA. Mm. So, but they were 1-for-17 with runners in scoring position in the two games. Bauer, you can kind of excuse, but, again, Plutko, and they get shut out last night. So, where they are right now, when they face some decent teams, St. Louis, Cleveland, Atlanta, they haven't done so well, but they've picked up all their wins, and they're making their hay with their offense against these bad teams. So it seems to me like they need to do something. Now, I mean, if you look strictly at Machado, he is just killing the ball right now. 43 RBIs, 15 home runs, a 1040 OPS, and I mean 120 total bases. The closest Cub to him in total bases is Javi Baez with 99. So again, when you look at, they keep coming up short against good pitchers with runners in scoring position. They're not able to put anything across. It seems like they really, if winning the whole thing is a priority this year, they're going to have to make some kind of move to get a bat like that that's going to make them a much more consistent offense.
Barring the Cubs offering a major chip that we're not thinking of, I just will be shocked if Machado is traded to the Chicago Cubs. And by the way, we talked about Russell, his career numbers, and he is now 446 games into his career, 4 years, hitting .241 with a .314 on base percentage.
Mm.
This year a little better, .250 average, .337 on base.
Mm.
So is that a major piece of a deal for Manny Machado?
Yeah. Good question.
To be determined.
Really good question. Fill in the blank on this next one. Justin Verlander allowing 11 total runs through his first 11 starts is blank.
Considering where he was a couple of years ago, it's very, very surprising.
Yeah.
He has returned to elite ace status in Major League Baseball. We had the conversation, talk show hosts across the country had this conversation at the deadline. Would you like to have Verlander added to your team for the postseason run? Yes, but do you want the $25, $30 million? The answer was pretty much no. But you know what? It looks like a really good deal for the Houston Astros right now.
Yeah, if you knew you were going to get this, you would have signed up for that in a heartbeat. But the problem was he had like a 3.8 ERA with Detroit last year, and he was showing signs of a guy who was deteriorating and not going to have a major bounce back like this. A 1.08 ERA with 93 strikeouts in 74-plus innings. I mean, he gave up 4 of the 11 runs also in his second start of the season. So when you get past that, after early April, he's allowed just 7 runs in his last 9 starts, and one of those unearned. So just amazing. Just 2 runs in his last 21 innings. Just, he has 2 years left on his contract. So, like you said, I mean, if the Cubs knew that this is the Verlander you're going to get, and I'm not saying this facetiously, but I just keep looking at Verlander's great. He's been great. He hasn't, no, he's got to get through the whole season, but he hasn't had a sub-3 ERA in a long time. So I just, the more I look at it, the more I say, man, that stuff that Trevor Bauer was talking about a couple of weeks ago with the spin rate and whether or not they're using some tacky stuff on there, it really looks like, to me, I think there might be some credence to it.
Boy, the 86 Astros, they had some really good starting pitching. Mike Scott, speaking of maybe stuff done to the baseball.
Yeah.
That's what the Mets always said. They had Nolan Ryan. They had Bob Nepper. I mean, they had a really good rotation back then. Jim Deshaies, who is now the Cubs analyst on television. And now you look at this group. Gerrit Cole's already struck out 100 coming over from the Pirates. Morton, another old Pirate, is absolutely great as their number four starter. And then you got Dallas Keuchel, a former Cy Young Award winner, kind of lost in the shuffle right now. Their team ERA is in position to go right up against the 68 Cardinals, who had one of the great ERAs in recent time. And, of course, that led to the lowering of the mound, the Bob Gibson 1.12 ERA. But that team, I think Steve Carlton might have still been on that team for St. Louis. So they have a chance to get into some really, really good territory if they continue at this pace, and they're doing it with the designated hitter up against them.
Yeah, and that's a big part of it. Just amazing as well. By the way, speaking of Bauer and Gerrit Cole, they were teammates at UCLA, helped the Bruins go to the College World Series several years back. I read something today. I did not know this. They can't stand each other, and they're going to go head-to-head this weekend in Cleveland when the Astros go to Cleveland. So that should be fun. I will have to see if I can find that on the old tube. I didn't realize that they didn't like each other. But, yeah, but they were college teammates, and they get to go head-to-head this weekend.
Wow. 68 Cardinals, Gibson 22-9 with a 1.12 ERA.
Not bad.
Nelson Briles 19 wins, 2.81. Steve Carlton at the age of 23, 13 wins and a 2.99 ERA. Ray Washburn 14 wins, 2.26. And Larry Jaster, what are you doing? A 3.51 ERA. He only won 9 games. There you go. Pretty good rotation in 68.
Not bad at all. All right, now you touched on this in your SportsCenter update a few minutes ago. Tom Izzo from Michigan State, there was a report that Orlando was interested in him, and they're reporting in East Lansing that Tom Izzo doesn't have any desire for the job. Considering the stuff that came up at Michigan State and just the whole thing, should Tom Izzo have maybe had any more interest in Orlando?
Do we know if he's really guilty of major things happening in East Lansing?
He's been sort of cleared of the allegations, I guess.
And that's what I'm saying. So he has no reason to run unless he just wants the payday from the NBA. That's all it's going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he enjoys the college game. He loves the camaraderie with the players. You can always see how much emotion he has on senior day for his players. He shows a lot more emotion than most coaches in those particular situations. So unless he is running from something, I don't see why he would not retire as the Spartan head coach.
Yeah, and he is 65 years old.
Is he really?
That's kind of amazing as well. 65 years old.
Wouldn't have guessed it.
Yep, so he's getting to that point where, like, you would think that if he was going to go to the NBA, it would have happened by now, and he's kind of kicked the tires a couple of times. He's had some offers before, 21 straight NCAA tournaments, though, and so I tend to agree. If it was going to happen, you think it would have happened by now. So I was actually kind of surprised, especially when you see 65 years old next to his name, that even though Larry Brown kept going forever, but
he was running from stuff.
Yeah, that's true, too. That's a good point there. All right, that's it for today.
13 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Nine minutes in front of the top of the hour, Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett. On this Thursday evening, you've tuned in to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser, Laven Insurance, Goshen Heart and Vascular, and Blackthorn Golf Club and their Blackthorn card. NBA playoffs last night. Pretty good college coach is running the Boston Celtics.
Yep. And
Boston beat Cleveland 96-83 to take a 3-2 Eastern Conference final lead. I did not watch the game. We had a South Bend Cubs game last night, but heard a couple of analysts today talking about how fatigued LeBron James looked in last night's game.
It's the first game of the series I've actually missed, and I had some stuff going on last night myself, so I didn't get to see it. And I'm kind of shocked that all of a sudden, because, you know, they win two games at home and these resounding wins and the whole thing.
It's
you never
over.
Heard anything about fatigue, did you? Now all of a sudden they lose a game It's just so game to game with all these storylines and narratives.
Celtics win the first two. How are they going to lose the series?
Right.
Cleveland wins the next two. They're going to win.
The genius coach in Boston. And then they lose two, and you're not hearing that anymore.
Celtics go to Cleveland, where they have not won this year, looking to wrap up the Eastern Conference final. Golden State and Houston 2-2. Big win by Houston in game four, winning in Oakland over the Warriors. NHL, the Stanley Cup final is set. Going to be some pretty good travel in this series because in the Stanley Cup final, you go 5, 6, 7 are in different locations. It's single games, 5, 6, and 7 at home for these teams.
And that's how they're doing it in the NBA now, too. When did they switch back to these formats? Because it seemed like, maybe early 90s, late 80s, they were doing that, 2-2, 1-1-1, basically, and then they switched back to the 2-3-2, and now they're back to this again.
Yeah, Vegas hosts games 1 and 2, Washington 3 and 4, then Vegas 5, Washington 6, and Vegas 7, if there is a game 7. And the Capitals shut out Tampa Bay 4-0 last night to win game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final. And so Alex Ovechkin, one of the great goal scorers in the last half century in the NHL, will have a chance to play for the Stanley Cup for the first time as the Capitals, who've had really the best team in the East and maybe in the NHL the last couple of years, got ousted by the Pittsburgh Penguins along the way. But this year, with probably not as good a team, they get it done. They shut out Tampa Bay, and it's Washington versus Vegas for the Stanley Cup.
It just sounds weird, doesn't it?
Oh, my goodness, does it sound weird. But Vegas got off to an 8-1 start. They proved right away that they were not your normal expansion team. And you got the Ovechkin factor trying to win a Stanley Cup, the one thing missing on a stellar NHL career by the Russian winger. So that is straight ahead. The Stanley Cup final begins on Monday in Vegas. Who would have thought that? Major League Baseball, as we talked about, the Cubs were shut out last night. They are idle today. The White Sox lost 9-3 to the Baltimore Orioles today. Trey Mancini hit a home run, the former Notre Dame first baseman for Baltimore today. So the White Sox woes continue, and I was just looking at some numbers. Shohei Ohtani, the young man from Japan who the Angels won the bidding war for, the pitcher-hitter, here are his numbers to date after going 1-for-4 with a couple of RBI last night in the Angels' 5-4 win over the Blue Jays, and he picked up a 2-run single in the 9th, his first game-tying hit in the 7th inning or later. As a batter, 28-for-91, 308, 6 home runs, 19 runs batted in. As a pitcher, 7 starts with the Angels, 4-1 with a 3.35 earned run average. I would say he is performing at a higher level than I would have expected. I guess I just anticipated he'd be really good at one and maybe average in the other, because it's just hard to be excellent at two different parts of this game playing it at the highest level. But so far, through almost 2 months, he has been up to the task.
Pretty cool. We haven't seen it in a long time.
Trout, Ohtani, you got all these big names, and it really overshadowed Albert Pujols picking up his 3,000th hit a couple of weeks ago. There was no buildup because it was all about Ohtani, and of course, Mike Trout is Mike Trout. Odd. We'll take our final break for this hour, 4 minutes in front of the top of the hour at WSBT. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By Lavin Insurance, the agency that rocks. See why at lavininsurance.com. Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. And by Blackthorn Golf Club and the Blackthorn Card, just $99. And you can save up to 80% off rounds of golf, including cart, at Blackthorn. The Golf Show, Saturday morning at 8 a.m. We'll have professional golfer Gabby Thin on the program. She'll be playing in the Four Winds Invitational in just a couple of weeks. It is the top of the hour at WSBT.